Hi, I'm Coral, one of the founders and hosts behind Crime Cafe Podcast. This is just a little disclaimer that goes out to all the people that think, do they know what they're talking about? Well, I'm here to tell you that no, we don't. We like to put at the beginning of each episode, letting y'all know that our show is based on facts and mostly on opinions. We like to keep things true, but in order to do that, we got to keep it real and let y'all know that we're not perfect. We may say things we don't mean and mean things we don't say. Also, all of our information is from public sources only. Therefore, we may or may not report things correctly. Some details in our cases may discuss rumors, comments made on public forums, and personal experiences about remembering the case ourselves. We may remember things wrong, but that's okay. We're not professionals and have no career experience in criminal and civil justice or the related fields. We're just two best friends talking while drinking way too many caramel macchiatos. With that being said, thanks for listening. If you didn't skip this part, you're great. But other than that, enjoy the show.
As we've all heard about, and in some cases witnessed, the horrific failings of engineers across the U.S. and the globe. I doubt you've heard of the Wyckoff Hotel fire. The Wyckoff Hotel was a beautiful early 20th century hotel in downtown Atlanta that unfortunately, for unknown reasons, was caught on fire in 1946. Taking the lives of over 100 people, consisting of mostly families and children. Why did this happen? It could be because everything made in 1912 was usually a bad idea. Or it could be the doings of a prolific illegal gambling ring in Atlanta in the 1910s. Join us as we discuss the South, fire, and the ghosts that still haunt us today. This is a tragic story of the Wyckoff Hotel fire. Hey guys, welcome to the Crime Cafe podcast. I'm Amber.
I'm Coral.
And this is going to be our first episode on the Wyckoff Hotel fire.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. So we're going to get started off on this episode by stating our references. And for that, if you want direct links, we'll have that in the description in the podcast notes. But for right now, basically our references are Wikipedia, History Goes Bump, a video by Sam Hayes on YouTube, a video by a nurse named Jane on YouTube, which is incredible, firehouse.com, and also wyckoffhotel.org. But like I said, the links will be in the podcast notes. So in today's episode, as you heard, we're talking about the Wyckoff Hotel fire, which happened in 1946 in Atlanta.
Have I said Wyckoff?
You said Wyckoff, or something like that, but that's fine. It's been pronounced both ways.
Okay.
Yeah. it doesn't matter. And actually, it's not even called that anymore.
Oh, okay.
So it's been changed names a couple of times. Yeah. No, that's fine. So, this hotel fire was huge. It was disturbing. Still talked about today. Actually, the 74th anniversary of that fire happened, I think, on December 9th. Not totally 100% sure on that, but it was a long time ago, and we have a lot to discuss in this episode, and we are so excited to bring this to you guys. So let's just get started. So back in 1913, the Wyckoff Hotel was opened. This was back when Woodrow Wilson was president. Who knows him? I don't remember him. But that's okay. The first ever bra was invented by Mary Phelps Jacob. How dare she? Cracker Jacks started putting toys in their boxes. That sounds amazing. Okay. The Wyckoff Hotel was built by this dude named William Fleming. It is 15 stories tall, and it is right on the busiest street in Atlanta, which is Peachtree. It's the most downtowniest downtown of Atlanta. It's actually called the Ellis Hotel now. It's less than a mile from Centennial Olympic Park, if you're familiar with Atlanta. Basically, Peachtree is where it all goes down.
Yeah, it's like the hub.
Yes.
A lot happens there.
Right. Yes. Obviously, you've been there a billion times.
Yes.
You know,
If you're familiar with the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is now the home of the Atlanta Falcons. The World of Coke, yes, the zoo.
Grady Hospital.
Oh, yes, which we will talk about later in this episode is Grady Hospital. Because it's I think it's only like maybe 0.2 miles from the Ellis Hotel. So, basically what we're saying is this is a huge hub for this is a huge hub for commuters and the residents of Atlanta and the surrounding areas. Just like in 2020, 1913 was much the same, except there was way less people and way more dirt roads, probably.
I'm sure.
So this is like, even in 1913, when literally dirt was the road, they were still like hustling and bustling on motherfucking Peachtree.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go.
So before we get into the fire, we're going to go over how the building was made and what it looked like. It was a beautiful building, but it was very poorly built. Very poorly.
Yes. And actually, since we are talking about how beautiful it was, I do have some pictures that from the winecoffhotel.org that I want to show you.
So while she's looking at those, the hotel stood at about 162 feet or 15 stories, mm-hmm. and it was very big for the time. That's still pretty big.
That is a big hotel.
Today.
Yeah.
In that time, it was the tallest building in Atlanta. And the tallest building in Atlanta in 2020 is the Bank of America Plaza, which I think a lot of people have probably seen that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle. Mm-hmm.
And it stands at about 932 feet or 55 stories tall.
Right.
So, a lot of growth since.
Yes.
15 stories was the biggest at the time.
15 to 55 in like 74 years.
Yeah.
However, I'm pretty sure that the Winecoff Hotel was the biggest, like, at the time. So it was probably like, ooh and ah. But this is it right here. This was like a pamphlet. It's huge, you know, so. And this was one of the rooms. We'll post these on our Instagram so you guys can see.
Yes.
They're not actual pictures. They're rendering, like, painted
It looks very nice, especially for the time. I'm sure this was
very,
very elegant.
Very much Titanic vibes.
Yeah, it looks very outdated now.
Yeah.
Of course. So like a lot of people in the South, William Wyckoff, that was who built the Wyckoff Hotel, he imagined a beautifully stunning hotel with incredible amenities. And we found some old postcards and other materials on winecoff.org, and you can check out these photos that we'll put on our Instagram.
Yeah.
That's the photos that we were just looking at and talking about. And did you mention our Instagram name?
Our Instagram is @crimecafepod. You can DM us and give us a follow.
Yes. At the time of the construction, the cost was $350,000. Which in today's money would be $9.2 million around about. Mm-hmm. And at the time of the fire, it was worth more than $10 million in today's money.
I wrote fucking big money. Yeah. That's big money.
Yeah.
Big cash money.
Very.
I have $9.2. Okay. Literally. So, basically, they made these postcards, which we just have to, I have to read this to you. It's fucking hysterical. So, here's the postcard. Amber's looking at it right now. Very much old-timey.
Yeah.
So, it's very plain. So, basically, they would give you these postcards when you checked into the Wyckoff Hotel, and they would basically come, like, as a room amenity. You know, you would have, like, the note cards, like the freaking post-its and shit, and pins. And it says, Hotel Wyckoff, absolutely fireproof.
No.
Very much Titanic vibes, unsinkable.
Oh, okay.
European plan, amazing. It doesn't say amazing. I added that. 200 rooms each with an individual bath. Located nearer than anything to everything on Atlanta's most famous thoroughfare, Peachtree Street. So basically they were saying, look, this is fucking European as shit. You got your own bath, okay? It's busy, it's bustling, and it's fucking fireproof. Don't even worry about it.
I wonder at the time how many hotels didn't have their own bath, or if they all had their own bath, if that was a big deal.
It had to have been a big deal.
I know you probably wouldn't have had one in your home. You'd probably have an outhouse in 1913. Oh,
yeah. Or, depending on the community size, maybe just, like, a local bath.
That's true.
Like, I could... That's true. If their number one selling point on this postcard is absolutely fireproof, and the third is 200 rooms, and they all have a bath.
Yeah.
That is very bougie.
Yeah. And I also had a restaurant with incredible crown molding and light fixtures.
Yes.
It's pretty much exactly what you would imagine a 1913, like 1920 hotel to look like.
Yes, very bougie, over the top draperies. See, that's the thing that in all my research about this, everybody talks about the tons and tons of draperies. And on History Goes Bump, she talked about how the walls had literal burlap on them as wallpaper.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why, but that sounds like kindling for a fire to me.
So it was very over the top and very glamorous.
Yes.
They wanted to attract.
We have a picture of the dining room, too. Yeah. We'll put it on our Instagram. I know that we're talking a lot about, like, all of the things that the hotel had, but we basically just want to tell you guys that this was so interesting and this was the place to go. Like, they had a coffee shop, which we love. Okay, we're here for it. We're drinking coffee right now. Amber's got a peppermint mocha. Well, yeah. She had, because she guzzled it.
Gone.
It was eliminated a long time ago. I wish I had the coffee menu, but back then, since it's literally 1913, it was probably just like coffee, take it or leave it.
Yeah.
That's the menu.
I'm sure there was nothing fancy.
I'm sure there wasn't even a menu. So, I actually have... This is so cool. I want to get this, like, framed for no reason. They have a dinner menu for the restaurant that was in the hotel. If you have ever been to Atlanta or you know where Atlanta is, tell me why there's oysters on the half shell, Kansas City sirloin steak, and fresh Maine lobster. Okay? Anyway, that's what they had going on, okay? Bunch of rich people and Maine lobster. So now that we've talked a little bit about the atmosphere and look of the hotel, we can start discussing why this hotel was a fire hazard entirely. So just like they said the Titanic was unsinkable, they said that the Wyckoff Hotel is fireproof. But once you listen to this, it becomes very clear that engineers, that's not a real job in 1913. The building was constructed by architect William Lee Stotter, and the owner and the architect both were named William, so it's kind of confusing, but it said that they claimed it was fireproof because the outer shell of the building was steel. The Titanic was unsinkable, and it was made of steel. Interesting. I suppose no one realized that although steel won't melt in a fire, the inside will if the materials are not fireproof. According to History Goes Bump, which is an incredible resource for historical entertainment, and I highly recommend her video, which we have linked in the show notes, she says that each floor comprised of wall-to-wall carpeting, which is very common in hotels.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that nowadays it's fire-resistant.
You'd hope.
You would hope. Well, they said this one was fireproof, so.
I don't understand how anyone would have thought that, though. Carpet and.
I guess they thought it just because the shell was steel. And the structure itself didn't burn, obviously.
No.
Just everything else.
Yeah.
So they, you know, had this wall-to-wall carpet. They had drapes, and the walls were covered in burlap. I just made a bunch of stupid notes about how dumb that is. But more concerning is the fact that even though the elevator shafts were fire-resistant because of the steel, the staircase literally curled around the shaft. And it was made of wood, burlap, and carpet. So you would be in this elevator, but everything around you twirling up is cloth and burlap.
And burning. In the History Goes Bump video, she says that they only had vertical exhaust vents, which would be pretty bad for a fire because it would be getting oxygen to the flames perfectly.
Yes.
It would be very inconvenient. So the oxygen was pretty much soaking the fire slowly, as there were no fire escape sprinklers or emergency extinguishers. There were also transoms above each and every door, which according to Google are those little windows above doors that people would open and close to let air in and out of their rooms without having to fully open the door, which in theory sounds lovely, but when fire is involved, I think we know how that could turn badly.
Yes.
That could turn out very badly.
Because you're getting oxygen right to the room, yeah, and letting flames in. Actually, that's how a lot of people died, is because of the transoms.
That's so tragic. I guess that's why they don't use those now.
But it was a form of free air conditioning.
Because I've never heard of at all.
No.
Okay, so now we're going to fast forward about 33 years later to December 7th of 1946. It was at about 3:12 to 3:15 a.m. that a bellboy noticed the fire and alerted the hotel manager, which then tried to alert the guest of the fire. I say try because all he could do was call each individual room.
Can you believe that?
So
they had no, well, you know, it's a billion years ago. They had no way of telling everybody.
So you could imagine how long that would take to call every room. It had 200 rooms?
Yeah, 200 rooms.
So if they all had somebody, he's having to make 200 calls.
And I did read somewhere that he started on, like, the first floor calling those rooms, but he only made it, I think, to, like, the fourth floor.
And he honestly should have started with the top.
Exactly.
Yeah. And for some reason,
the light came off for some reason. Open the door, yeah.
And for some reason, the fire department wasn't called until 3:42 a.m.
30 minutes.
Yeah.
So. I'm just glad they even have a fire department, because at this point.
I was kind of surprised.
Fire department.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I guess he was trying to call and tell people to evacuate their rooms before he thought of calling the department.
Oh, yeah. And I doubt they have multiple phones.
Yeah, it was probably one phone that he had.
Like, they're just happy they have baths.
Yeah, exactly.
I doubt they all have phones.
Unfortunately, even if they would have called the second the fire was noticed, it wouldn't have made much of a difference due to the significant hazards within the hotel and the firefighters' inability to fight a fire of that scale at that time. That was not something that they...
No.
Even today, it's not something that regularly occurs.
Oh, yeah. If we had the same setup today, you know, no sprinklers, no anything like that. Well, wait, sorry. I guess every single room did have a phone because he called them. So that was dumb. But back to what we were saying, the
but if somebody calls you and tells you to evacuate, you're not going to call 911.
So the firefighters, if they were working against the same building today, it probably wouldn't have ended well.
No.
Even in 2020. So the openness of the staircase, which was like the other option you had if you didn't want to take the elevator.
So one staircase, one elevator.
One staircase, one elevator, and there was only one entry.
For 200 rooms to evacuate.
And I think it was about 8 stories tall.
Wonderful.
And it, because of the incredible ventilation that this staircase had, because there was an opening in the roof, it made it impossible for the firefighters to keep up because the fire was getting constant oxygen. So, of course, the fire goes where oxygen is, and in this case, it's up, and the fire did start in the lower levels. So basically, this thing was just like a smokestack. Like, it was getting oxygen, and it's like, fine, we're just going up. Like, start working. The fire just starts going up and up and up. They would later find out that the fire presumably started on the third floor. No real cause of the fire was ever given, but we're going to talk about that later. Because the hotel was made of literally carpet and burlap, and all the rooms had tiny windows above the doors, and the fact that it was literally in the middle of the night, sadly, most of the victims would jump to their deaths. And I do want to give you guys a trigger warning. This story is not just about a fire. This is about the loss of life, love, children, families, separation. It's horrible. So if you don't want to listen to that, this is where it gets pretty messed up. So, the firefighter ladders, unfortunately, did not reach past the fifth floor. So there were lots and lots of people literally fucking stuck with no fire escape, because there was only one entry to the staircase. No help. No sprinklers, no stairwell, nothing. So they would be in their rooms in essentially a coffin.
They probably mostly died of smoke inhalation.
A lot of them did, yeah.
Which is terrifying.
The firefighters would deploy life-saving nets to help brace the fall of people jumping out. And in most cases, this did not work, because there were literally too many people jumping out at once. The nets just broke. And I read somewhere that so many people were jumping out that, like, the nets would break, and then some people lived because the bodies broke their fall. Yeah. It's horrible. And the reason they deployed so many nets is because they were like, there's no way for them to get out except jump, and we cannot keep up with this fire.
Oh yeah.
So they just had to, like, make sure people lived.
So some people in the hotel were able to find a board somewhere within the hotel, and they made a bridge of sorts from the hotel to the next building over, and a bunch of people were saved this way. Mm-hmm. That was incredible thinking.
Yeah, I think it was over like 10 feet. People That's walked amazing. A plank 10 feet.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the fire did not end until 6 a.m. December 7th, which left 119 people dead and over 100 injured. And there were only 280 guests and staff staying within the hotel. So that's almost every one of them was dead or injured.
Yeah.
And among those people were William Wyckoff himself, who stayed permanently in a suite on the 10th floor even after the hotel was sold to someone else in 1937. And it's believed that he died in his sleep.
From smoke inhalation.
Yeah. So among the list of victims, there's an extremely large amount of children that perished in the fire. This was because 40 teenagers across Georgia were set to attend a youth legislation convention of sorts the next day. Unfortunately, only 8 of those 40 survived, so 32 students died.
I put so fucking sad, I'm gonna cry. I hate myself.
On Wyckoff.org, there is an amazing entry describing a story of a couple teen girls from the youth group were curiously peering into the hotel bar late on the night of December 6th. The entry includes a video of a recording of some of the teen girls singing with a piano in the bar. It's truly a haunting recording, knowing that in just a few short hours, their fate will be unlike they could have ever imagined.
Yeah, I listened to it. It is so sad. You know, they're up late, they don't want to go to sleep, they're excited, there's a party going down at the bar. They go in and they I got chills. Like they,
that's so
somebody's
sad.
Somebody's playing a piano and they're like, "Come on, sing!" And they start singing. It's beautiful. It's really sad.
There were also two brothers, Harold and Robert Irvin. They were recently discharged Navy pilots. They were staying at the hotel to interview for various jobs. On Friday night, December 6th, the brothers were attending a party in the hotel, possibly the above-mentioned party at the bar. Robert returned to his room and Harold stayed at the party. This would be the last time the brothers saw each other. Robert was rescued by a ladder. He would later become a Delta airline pilot, which is where he would work until his retirement.
That always killed me, that story.
That's so sad.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most of the victims were families or children. Like we said, newlyweds Charles and Mildred Boschung, I believe, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, were staying in the hotel. You can find a picture of them on Weinkauf.org. They were trapped by fire in their rooms, where they eventually fashioned a rope made of tied together sheets in hopes of reaching a ladder four stories below. They did make it to the ladder, but unfortunately Mildred was knocked off of the ladder by a falling woman. Only Charles survived that night. Though the families and friends and loved ones of both the victims and survivors were forever scarred by the events of the Weinkauf fire, the nameless victims were also incredibly affected by these events. I'm going to tell you the story of Nurse Jane, who worked as a supervisor at Grady Hospital in Atlanta. This is so sad. So this is one of the videos we have linked below. I highly recommend that video. Well, I say that about every single thing that we mentioned, but it is truly amazing. This older woman is like at an assisted living and she's telling her grandson the story of the time she was a nurse on that night. So she worked in what's called the Black Building, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the building where they only treated black people. This is also the building that had the morgue. Oh. The white building did not have a morgue.
Sick.
Very sick. So, that's amazing. So Nurse Jane was there working the overnight shift from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., which is obviously during the time, you know, of the Weinkauf fire. She explains that because the morgue was in the Black Building basement and she was the only supervisor, her night would be filled with horror as she would be identifying and taking in over 100 bodies, 108 to be exact. And let's just remember that 119 people died, so she took in almost all of them. Because the morgue is so incredibly cold, she would eventually contract pneumonia, and also having lack of sleep and nutrition. She explained that because she wasn't getting better from her pneumonia, her doctor suggested she vacation to Florida. She went to Florida and ended up liking it so much she never came back.
Not blame her.
I know. She said because of the trauma and because she got so sick, she was like, bye. Totally don't blame her.
So, just a few years after the fire, they actually reopened the hotel, naming it Peachtree on Peachtree. So, they got creative.
Peachtree on Peachtree.
And in the 60s, it was turned into a retirement facility.
Yes, just for a...
So...
Just for a good old few
For years. An unknown reason, the retirement facility was moved to the suburbs in 1982. It remained vacant until 2007 when it reopened as the Ellis Hotel. And today you can stay in the Ellis Hotel for around $130 a night. The rooms are incredibly small but very modern looking. And as we stated earlier, the cause of the fire was never confirmed. Which bothers me.
I know.
Although most agree that it was most likely on purpose. There's a theory that it was set by a group of people gambling illegally. Apparently, there was a group of people that would run an illegal gambling thing out of different Atlanta hotels for a couple of weeks at a time. They were staying in the Winecoff that night, and everyone in that room survived.
Yes. So. And in one of the videos we have linked, the guy actually shows you where their room was and where they were able to escape at. And it was at the perfect location. Like, that's the only room in the whole entire hotel where everybody in it survived.
Yeah, and how unlikely is that that they would have survived?
I know.
So, no one was ever charged, even though the Atlanta mayor brought forth hundreds of arson investigations across the nation to the hotel.
Investigators.
Oh, arson investigators. That is what it is. Okay, so no one was ever charged despite the Atlanta mayor bringing hundreds of arson investigators from across the nation to the hotel.
Thousands of people gathered outside of the Winecoff Hotel the day after the fire to remember those who lost their lives. You can see these pictures online. You can look them up. It's very, very sad. Fire codes and safety regulations were changed as the Winecoff fire was used an example of how not to make a building and also how you shouldn't say it was fireproof ever. They're not allowed to say a building is ever fireproof again. Thank God. Yes. Amen. A marker was placed at the Ellis Hotel in 1994 by the survivors and families of the victims. You can find a complete account of the Winecoff Hotel fire in the book The Winecoff Fire, The Untold Story of America's Deadliest Hotel Fire by Sam Hayes and Alan B. Goodwin. You can find that on Amazon. And that is the unfortunate story of the Winecoff Hotel fire of 1946, aka the deadliest hotel fire in U.S. history.
It's disturbing because they thought that they could not perish the way they did.
Yes.
They thought they were safe.
The irony in that not only is it fireproof, or not only did it catch on fire, but they were caught in such a way that was like, I don't know, it's like...
And even if you woke up and smelt smoke or anything, you wouldn't have thought...
You couldn't have done
the
anything.
Building's on fire.
Yeah. But even if...
Even if you did think that, it wouldn't have mattered.
No, because where would you have gone besides out the window?
Yeah.
And there was several stories about, like, there was one couple that filled up their bath, and they, it's amazing, they wet their mattress, put their mattress against the wall, and it actually saved them. Like, they just soaked their mattress. But there's so many stories that are horrible about this fire, the families that were separated. There were tons of babies at this hotel, tons of children. And actually, there was, I think, one or two chaperones for all these kids, and they survived. So, yeah, they didn't die.
So sad.
I couldn't imagine being a chaperone of 40 kids and then... And then 32 of them die.
Oh, I know.
I would probably. I don't know what I would do. So, you know, I think the reason I wanted to cover this case is because I've never heard a single podcast about it, but it should be talked about because it wasn't fair and it shouldn't have happened. It's just one of those things that shouldn't have happened. And we should remember the victims. Also, they say that there are ghosts, obviously.
I'd like to stay.
I know. I knew you would say that. But it's a cute little hotel. The rooms are tiny. They were even tiny back in that day, I think. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know if I'd want to stay. They say that you can hear like laughing children coming down the hallway and, you know,
I feel like a lot of people go in thinking that that's what they're going to see, so that's what they see in here.
Oh, yeah. There's videos on YouTube of people at the Ellis Hotel now, you know, trying, being like, ooh, there's a ghost.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So that is the Winecoff Hotel fire. If you guys have any questions or anything to add, please email us at crimecafepod@yahoo.com. And we will be doing a bunch of different cases. We've got so many ideas. But if you want to suggest something, please go ahead.
Yes, definitely send us suggestions.
I know Amber would love to read those emails.
Yeah.
Suggestions. So, yeah, just DM us.
Or follow us on Instagram.
Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram, Crime Cafe Pod. But until next time, stay beautiful. I hate myself. Don't murder anybody. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Okay, we're live. Hey, guys. Welcome back to... not welcome back. Welcome to...
You're good.
The crime... Okay.